News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Derry O'Rourke, the former Irish Olympic swimming coach, has left a devastating impact on Irish swimming history as one of the most notorious predators in the sport. His repeated offences have exposed the vulnerabilities within the Irish Amateur Swimming Association, the IASA, which led to its collapse and subsequent restructuring as Swim Ireland. Now, to shed more light on this case and its broader implications, Conor Lally, crime and security editor for the Irish Times. Conor, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, the 78-year-old, he got a further 10 years in jail yesterday for the rape and indecent assault of a girl who was 13 at the time it began in October of 1989.
That's right. Derry O'Rourke was, as you say, back before the Central Criminal Court yesterday. He got 10 years for those crimes. You know, this particular case follows, you know, very sadly follows the pattern of his of the previous four cases that he has been at the centre of in the courts. And obviously, this man has been in and out of jail now, really, since the late 90s. And this woman, as you say, she was between 13 and 14 back then. This was from October 89 until the summer of the following year that she was assaulted and raped by Derry O'Rourke. So he received 10 years for those crimes yesterday. He will serve 7.5, and by the time he gets out of prison, he will be around 85. He appears to be deteriorating quite quickly. His physical health is quite poor. Even relatively recently, as he came in and out of court, he was much more sprightly, energetic and so on. But yesterday, you know, he was walking with the aid of a walking stick. He was very slow getting into the witness box and so on. This is an old man, but obviously during these during the victim's evidence pass, we got a real insight into just how cruel he was and the control that he had over these kids. So the victim in this case, she's in her 40s now. She hasn't been named at her request. She was aged 13 and 14 at the time. She was in an open swimming class that Derry O'Rourke was supervising back in 89. He essentially picked her out from a group of her friends. He told her and her father that she had potential and that he would coach her. Now, this was a big deal at the time because he was a very prominent coach, a very prominent person, really, in the Irish swimming world. And he would have coached people and been the manager of Irish teams that really went all over the world to, you know, the World Championships, the Olympic Games and so on. So to be picked out by him and to be told that you had potential and for him to offer you coaching, that was a pretty big deal at the time. But the pattern then started. He told this girl, who, as I say, was 13 at the time, to train in a lane on her own in the pool, which was closest to the changing rooms. And then pretty quickly, he began abusing her then in a room off the pool. And this lasted for 9 months. And really, the abuse only stopped when the girl was raped. And she wouldn't go back to the pool after that. She basically stopped her participation in the sport on that day and did not go back. And now she's obviously come forward years later. She gave a statement to the Gardaí and they have run a criminal investigation again into Derry O'Rourke. And again, we see him going to jail for 10 years yesterday.
They believe, the Gardaí do, that perhaps there are more victims out there who have yet to come forward.
They do. If you look at the cases so far, there is evidence that he has had at least 19 victims that have come forward and convictions have been secured in relation to his abuse of those girls. Now, that abuse really stretches from 1970 to 1992. And this is a man who, you know, was in a very powerful position in the sport. He held these permanent coaching jobs in places where he had access to kids, to young girls. And he just really seems to have used that position as a way of, as I say, getting access to them for the purposes of sexually abusing them. And the Gardaí are now, you know, the Gardaí now believe that he very likely had lots of other victims during that period of time. One interesting fact of, I suppose, his repeated appearances before the courts and his repeated jail terms is that in some of the cases when the women either saw media coverage about him, or they saw media coverage about other coaches, other swimming coaches that weren't named at the time when they were before the courts. These women came forward and they gave statements to the guards, and that enabled the guards then to carry out more investigations into them. So as the media coverage has happened, it has essentially prompted more women into action, and the Gardaí are very hopeful that that will happen again. Even though O'Rourke's health is obviously very poor, you know, he will be quite well cared for in jail. Everything will be handed to him. So if there were any more victims out there, certainly Garda sources are telling me that if they came forward, they gave statements of complaints, that these would be pursued. And the fact that Gerry O'Rourke is the age that he's at won't stop those inquiries taking place.
Now, when you look at it, you wonder, how did he get away with it? I mean, he obviously was brazen. He had supreme confidence that his victims would not actually speak out. So obviously his practice of grooming these kids, it made perfect over the years. He got so good at it, he acted with total impunity.
He really did. And as you say, he was very, you know, very sadly, he was very well practiced at this. Like, you know, his period of offending that we're aware of spans 23 years. And it was really, I suppose, the access that he had to these young girls, you know, really allowed him, to carry on for as long as he did. Obviously, Pat, we have to think back as well. We were, you know, the Ireland that I suppose this abuse happened in wasn't the same as the Ireland of today. You didn't really question people in authority. Children didn't question adults and so on. And it was only when some of these girls, you know, later went on to school and they were doing sexual awareness education that they realised that what had happened to them was wrong. A lot of them just didn't tell anybody. And this particular victim said that she had to leave the place where she lived. She then had to leave Ireland, and she was very sad about that because, you know, she thought Ireland was a wonderful place, but she just felt she could not live here because of what happened to her. She also told the court in her victim impact statement that one of the main reasons why she didn't have any children of her own was because she didn't want any child to be brought into the world and to go through what she had. She also spoke about things like self-harm and trying to take her own life. So in a lot of these cases, you know, these young girls, at the beginning, they just didn't know what had happened because they were so young. I mean, one of his victims was only 10 at the time. And these children were just so young. They didn't really understand what was happening to them. And then, you know, slowly as it dawned on them what had happened, they had already got into a pattern then of feeling shame about this. They wanted to suppress what had happened and so on. And they, I suppose, they came up with all these, you know, harmful techniques of concealing and suppressing what had happened to them. And it really is classically what happens to a lot of people who have been sexually abused. They don't speak out at the time. That becomes a pattern over a very long period of time. And that becomes very, very harmful.
And of course, Conor, the fear of not being believed, which, you know, for a young child, and they think, well, if I, you know, make this claim against this powerful man that my parents seem to admire enormously, will I be believed?
Well, this is it. I mean, the fear of not being believed was a very big thing. The position that this man had as well, Gerry O'Rourke, you know, he was regarded as a godlike figure in the Irish swimming world. He could make or break your career if he picked you out from a group and offered you coaching. You know, these kids and their parents really felt like they were on the fast track to, you know, gaining selection onto Irish teams and so on. So there was a lot of glamour that kind of came with being taken under his wing and being coached by him towards those Irish teams. And one of the really sad aspects of this is that, you know, for many of the victims, their parents were really dedicated to them. They drove them to the pool, you know, 5 a.m. every morning. They waited outside as they trained inside the pool, you know, sitting outside in their car on a cold winter's day from 5 a.m. And for a lot of them, their children were actually being sexually abused by Gerry O'Rourke inside that pool. Really, he kind of had the mechanism. He was king of the world that he occupied, and he really just abused that position for years and years. And Nobody really suspected him. I mean, he was regarded as a kind of a, you know, gregarious, larger-than-life kind of person. He was a very respected coach. The one thing that I suppose some people will speak of when they think back is that he could be quite crude about the athletes that he coached, even the very young girls. And this is now, I suppose, in hindsight, seen as a warning sign. But really, in those early years, nobody suspected at the start that he was sexually abusing children in the way that he was.
Now, it sounds like the IASA was a cesspit at the time. We had George Gibney, who left Ireland because there were accusations of sexual abuse against him. And then there was the extraordinary case of Frank McCann, which you've written about in the paper today, vice president of the IASA, who actually murdered his wife and his 18-month-old foster daughter. That was back in 1991 in an arson attack because he was about to be exposed.
That's right, Frank McCann. He burnt down the family home and he murdered his wife and his daughter because he had been sexually abusing girls that he was coaching. And one of them became pregnant through that sexual abuse. He knew that was going to emerge publicly and he didn't want his wife to know. So he essentially set fire to their home and killed his wife, Esther, and their daughter, Jessica. And he's actually still in prison now. That happened, 33 years ago now, and he's actually still in jail now. He has made efforts in the last few years to be freed from jail. So far, they haven't been successful. George Gibney will be a name that a lot of people will know. And interestingly, him and Derry O'Rourke, they were the national team coach one after the other. So they really ran an awful regime there. But he was charged back in 1993 with the sexual abuse of 27 young swimmers. And he effectively put up a claim that the alleged abuse happened so long ago that he was unable to defend the charges properly. And the charges were dropped and he fled to Scotland and got a coaching job there. When he was exposed as having that job there and what his history was and what the allegations were in Ireland at the time, he then fled to the US and he's still there now. And as we know, there was a podcast done a few years ago which tracked him down to Florida. That sparked a fresh inquiry by An Garda Síochána and that is still actually underway. So there was a group of them there really at the apex of the sport in Ireland. And really, you would have to say, even when the Irish Amateur Swimming Association, when they were approached and these allegations were put to them about some of these people, they didn't really take action very quickly. And it took a long, long time for things to happen. Gary O'Toole, who's a former top international athlete, he did a lot of the groundwork. He went to people that he suspected had been abused. And he essentially got some of her testimony from them, him and his father, Aidan O'Toole. And they went to the IASA at the time, but there was no action really taken. And the association really didn't behave well. And as you said earlier, it was replaced by a new organization, when all this fallout eventually did happen.
What is your own feeling about the IASA? Was it such an appalling vista, to borrow from the judge in the Birmingham 6 case, such an appalling vista that they couldn't contemplate it could all be true?
I think,
or were they deliberately hiding things, covering up?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the time they couldn't. I suppose what they were faced with and the allegations that were being put to them were so widespread and so serious and involved obviously several of their top people, and it was coming from one of their top athletes, if you like, who had, as I say, Gary O'Toole, who really is the hero of the piece here. He went off and did a lot of research on it. He wouldn't let it go, and he went to them several times with quite a bit of evidence. And whether the IASA was stuck in the headlights, didn't really know what to do or what the explanation was, but they certainly didn't act on it. It seemed to be too big for them. It seemed to be too serious. And I think acting on it and opening that can of worms and bringing out everything into the opening was just too hard for them. So they opted to keep their heads down until it reached a stage where they really weren't able to. And then all of these, allegations then came out. And obviously the vast majority of them have been proven true in court in the years since then.
Conor Lally, Irish Times crime and security editor, thank you very much for that. A text: we need mandatory life sentences for people like Derry O'Rourke. Sentencing is too haphazard in this country.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR
on News Talk.